I told you yesterday I'd show you what I use for my loofah sponge, and that's this right here. I actually got it at the 99-cent store, and I just bought one to make sure it would work. Now I'm going to go back, because once this gets wet, it gets like this, and then you can do all the exfoliating or removing of the dead skin. This one is really great. Loofah sponge is nice, but for me, they stay wet too long, and because of my suitcase, you know, this dries out in just a couple of hours. So I can't, my loofah sponge at home, I can't travel with it because that little plant stays wet too long. But this dries up right away, and like I said, it's at the dollar store. I mean, wow, that's great. Surprising what you find at the dollar store sometimes. Well, you can touch it and see. Don't use it, just you can touch it. We don't want to share dead skin. You'll see it at the end today. Yeah, we didn't go all the way through yesterday because we were hopping around a little bit. But we're going to talk about sunshine to start with. And, of course, you're doing good now. Since I've been here, it's been very sunny. I'm really pleased. So today I took the mattress and I put it outside because I put my mattress in the sun from time to time because to disinfect it. But I'm getting just a little ahead of myself. So let's start by saying we already had our prayer. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 7, he said in the Bible, it is good to see the sun. We didn't realize what kind of medical advice that was, but it really is. These people who live in dark, cold, rainy climates like England, how many of you ever spent some time in England? Ever look at the faces on the subway? You ask them where Carnaby Street is, and they go, over there. What? Over there. Yes. It's called SAD, SAD, Seasonal Affective Disorder. You need to see the sun. Now, they do have these ones, these lamps you can buy that are special for that. And actually, there's a man at Black Hills Health Institute who knows the exact kind of bulbs to buy. He told me where to buy it. You can. I think I bought it at... What's that big hardware store? No. It's like a Lowe's, I think. But it has to have like 59,000 lumens, and it has to have this, and it has to have this to be a full-spectrum sun. So I bought those lights, and that's what I use all day in my house when it's cloudy or whatever. But at 8 o'clock at night, I turn off those ultra-bright lights, and I have yellow light bulbs, you know, like the bug lights. And at 8 o'clock, all you see are yellow lights in my place. Because it allows my eyes to calm down and my brain to calm down. And it's kind of like there's a nice warm fire glowing someplace. Yellow's my favorite color. It's the brightest, happiest, cheeriest color. It's my favorite. And I see she's wearing yellow right there. I always spot yellow when I see it. So anyway, try that. Go buy a couple of bug lights and at 8 o'clock, turn off your regular lights and get a couple of lamps, screw in the bulb light. You know, you can go at Value Village or what do you call it here? Do you have... St. Vincent de Paul or Salvation Army, just go get a couple of cheap lamps, screw in those yellow bug lights, and it's amazing how calm you start feeling with those warm yellow lights in your house, and then you're ready to go to sleep. All right. When we talk about the sun, a first thing that comes out of people's mouth is, what about skin cancer? Yeah, skin cancer. And that's a good concern. They've done epidemiological studies, which means population groups around the planet, who's got skin cancer and who doesn't. And, of course, you know who's the big leader is the Scandinavian countries. And what really shocked them were the African tribesmen. Skin cancer is almost unheard of in the African tribesmen. Now, 90% of their body is exposed to hot tropical sun, isn't it? You would think skin cancer would be rampant there. Why isn't skin cancer rampant with the African tribesmen exposing 90% of their body to hot tropical sun? Well, there are a couple of factors with the melanin and the darker complexion, but they said the biggest factor that they attributed to was their diet. You see, the African tribesmen, those who live inland, are basically vegetarian. Now, those who live on the coastal region get a little fish in their diet, but once you start going inland, it's a plant-based diet. And what they've discovered is when the angstrom units penetrate the epidermal layer of your skin and it stimulates the melanin to come to the surface to protect you, make you darker, if you have animal fat in your diet, the reaction can be cancerous. The angstrom units of the sun does not react to plant fat, to vegetable fat, only to animal fat. Which makes sense. God wouldn't give us something to give us cancer, would he? No. The sun is supposed to be healing for us. So why isn't it healing? Because we're disobeying in another area, which we're going to get to tomorrow and the next day. When you disobey in one area, it's a domino effect, isn't it? Another area will fail, and another area will fail, and another area will fail. So if we're not eating the diet from the Garden of Eden, we're going to have a reaction that can be cancerous from the sunshine. Now, it's not true for everybody, and it doesn't happen all the time, but as a general rule of principle, these epidemiologists say if you have a plant-based diet, you don't have to worry as much about skin cancer. Now, granted, in the summertime, you want to stay out of the noon sun. From about 11 o'clock to 2 o'clock, I do my grocery shopping, I do my laundry, I do my house cleaning, whatever. I don't go outside at those times. But in the mornings and in the afternoons, I do. If you're blue-eyed blonde, obviously you have to be more careful. You don't have as much melanin in your system. I'm dark German on my father's side, and so I have more of that darker olive skin, so I can take the sun a little longer. You have to adjust. The big key factor is do not burn. Once you burn, the skin is set up for skin cancer, especially as a child. And who's the most likely to get a sunburn? It's a child. Yeah. But if you haven't burned, that's the big thing. Don't burn. That really damages the sun and predisposes you to developing skin cancer. If you live in cold, rainy areas, you can use the tanning beds. I grew up in Alaska, and of course, tanning beds are on every other street corner. But you have to use the UVA, ultraviolet alpha, not the UVB, ultraviolet beta. Dr. Yerbach, who's head of the photobiology department at Temple University, which is one of the skin cancer specialty areas in the United States, says by all means use the tanning beds, but use UVA if you have a lot of rain and cold weather. Don't be like the teenage girls who are in there every other day. A couple of times a month is plenty. That's all you need. But it's good, and it also helps people with psoriasis, really bad dry skin. It helps to lubricate the skin better and use those UVA tanning beds. So, what are the benefits for being out in the sun? Well, for one thing, it's going to convert cholesterol to vitamin D. You can actually lower the serum cholesterol in your blood by going out in the sun because it converts to vitamin D. It'll increase your red and white blood cells. It'll destroy bacteria and heal injuries. It'll increase circulation and perspiration. And for you ladies, it'll help balance out your hormones. So get those women every month out in the sun. All right? Sunshine has all these benefits, not only for your own body, but also for your house. You need to keep the drapes open. You need to keep the trees and bushes away from the windows and let sunlight come into the house. Sunlight is a wonderful disinfectant. And even if it's a north window, it doesn't have to be streaming in. Even if it's a north window, you'll get benefits from keeping it open. So mine are always open, wide open. I never close the drapes except sometimes at night. But even then, I live in a very wooded area, 5 acres, and so we don't have people right next door to the place. In fact, I looked out my windows, I can't see anybody but trees. So that's kind of nice. But keep the sunlight coming into the house so that it will help disinfect your house. And as I said, every week, just about, I take my pillow and I put it outside because I want my pillow clean and sanitary. Why? I'm breathing through that, aren't I? What I'm breathing is going through that pillow. I travel with my own pillow. If you go to the room where I'm at right now, you can see my pillow. I don't breathe everybody's cooties, okay? Hotel cooties, nobody's cooties. It's going to be mine. So I put my pillow outside. Because you know what's in your bed and you know what's in your pillow. What are they? They call them dust mites. I don't know where they came up with that name. They're there for your dead skin. They eat your dead skin. And in a year, they do about a pound of poo-poo in your mattress and in your pillow. That's why if you take a pillow and you fold it in half and it doesn't pop up, get rid of it. It's dead. It's full of poo-poo. And that's why it lays down dead. Okay? It's full. So you want a fresh, clean pillow all the time. And putting it out in the sun, I leave it out all day long. My mattress, I take out several times a year, and I leave it out all day long, and I flip it like a pancake, and the next day I do it. Right now, I've got the mattress outside. You go by the house, you'll see a white mattress there. That's the one I'm sleeping on, because I want to disinfect it before my bones get on top of it. So disinfect your mattress, disinfect your pillow. Ellen White says that the bedroom has to be the cleanest, healthiest room of the house. Why? Because you spend one-third of your life here. You spend more time in the bedroom than you do any other room in the house. You don't realize that, but you do. This is a very critical area to be. She says air should be always circulating in the sleeping area. It should be dry, and it should be fresh. And so we'll get on. When I talk about rest, we'll talk about a few more things. But keep sunlight coming in your house. And, of course, the most important sun. Oh, I misplaced my Bible. Did I leave it back at the house? I must have. Well, I'll just tell it to you. Does anybody have a Bible here? Actually, I just need New Testament, John. Okay. Is it marked the same way mine is? All right. As important as the S-U-N in the sky is, the S-O-N in here is much more important, isn't it? We need the Son of God more than we need the sun in the sky. But in John chapter 12, verse 35, it tells us, no, it's not marked like mine. John 12, 35, while you have the light, believe in the light, that you may become children of light. And that's what we want to be, don't we? We want to be light bearers to the world. Verse 36, while you have the, oh, excuse me, actually I needed 35 and 36. Yet a little while is the light with you. Walk while you have the light, lest darkness come upon you. He that walketh in darkness doesn't know where he's going. And then John 12, 46 says, I have come as light into the world, that whoever believes in me should not be in darkness. So we want the light of God and not the darkness of this world in our lives. All right, air. This is very important. The very last psalm, Psalms 150, verse 6, the very last psalm says, let everything that has breath praise the Lord. So if you're breathing, you should be praising the Lord. Because the Bible says everything that has breath should be praising the Lord. And that's what we want to do. The best thing to have with your air is negative ions. I know that sounds negative, but it's true. Positive ions are produced in the cities. Negative ions are in highest concentration at the ocean and in the mountains. And isn't it interesting throughout the Bible, where do you often find Jesus teaching people? Mountains and the water. Isn't that true? Yes, the Sea of Galilee, the Red Sea, Mount Nebo, Mount Gerizim, Mount Sinai, all of the mountains, all of the... Why? Because Jesus knew that's where the highest concentration of the negative ions, which means you'll be more relaxed and more receptive. Now, they have special machines that you can buy for your home and for your car that produces negative ions. Have you heard of that? They're called ionophoresis machines. They plug into the cigarette lighter. I have friends in Los Angeles who have them, and they said it makes a world of difference in their driving. When they plug that in, they're so calm and relaxed, they don't have to carry a revolver in the glove compartment anymore. Yes, and in their houses, they have these machines. I have a filter in my house that I use in my machine. I don't need negative ions because I live out in the country. And you know, each tree produces different healing qualities. Did you know that? We call this thing aromatherapy, and I thought it was a little hokey until I realized Ellen White was talking about it. And she says, plant different trees around your house because different trees give off different aromatherapy. She doesn't use the word aromatherapy, but she says they give off healing qualities. So the pine tree, the birch tree, the oak, different healing qualities. Isn't that interesting? So put those different plants around. Now we can study it, and we know it's true. But 150 years ago, God had to tell her. That's the only way we could have known. So I'm very happy that I have different kinds of trees, and I give them a little pat when I walk by them, and I give them a little sniff and say, thank you, you know. Having all those different plants and trees around your house is really good for it. All right? Make sure there's no rotting things around your house. That's important, because anything that's decaying or rotting around your house goes into your house, and you breathe it. I don't know, you could probably have some problems here because this looks a lot like Oregon to me, West Virginia. And you've got to be really on top of the leaves and stuff rotting around your house. Hawaii, it's very difficult, very humid there, and there's a lot of breakdown in the foliage. So you really got to keep on top of that and keep that stuff away from the house so that you got good air when it's coming through your house and refreshing you. Nose breathing is what's important because the nose filters the air, it moistens the air, it filters the air, and it gets it to the correct temperature before it hits the bronchial tubes and goes inside the lungs. So nose breathing is very important. Try to make sure you're doing nose breathing. You can practice good deep breathing by just putting your hands on your hips or locking them behind your head. You know, you've seen marathon runners after their run, they're going like this because they want to lift up that rib cage and get the lungs to the mass at maximum capacity, which, by the way, is another reason for nose breathing. When Adam breathed the breath of life into Adam, when God breathed it into Adam, where did he breathe into? His nostrils. You know, I never really noticed that before because I have CPR training. I'm thinking, yeah, he breathed right through his mouth, you know. But it says, no, it breathed through his nose. And what we have found out is there are special cells at the bridge of your nose called nitric oxide cells. And when you breathe through your nose, these nitric oxide cells are activated and they cause your arteries and your lungs to expand even further. Isn't that interesting? So God knew to breathe into his nostrils the breath of life. And when you see us marathon runners running really long distances, you'll see us doing both mouth and nose breathing. Have you ever seen that? It looks like this. We need the mouth because we need massive amount of oxygen, but we want to do the nose to keep those nitric oxide cells activated so our lungs and our arteries are at their maximum capacity. So this is all very interesting, and it's all right there in the Bible just staring at us. But we're not careful students like we should be. We just keep reading it. Oh, he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. Really? Why nostrils? Why not his mouth? Oh, these nitric oxide cells. I think it's so cool. We're just catching up to God. All right. Air is usually cleanest in the morning. If you want to do a lot of good deep breathing, first thing in the morning before all those little four-wheeled animals get out and start polluting and exhausting. So fresh air in the morning. I recommend people take 20 or 30 good deep breaths in the morning. Try to do it before each meal so that you're activating these lungs. You know, when they take x-rays of lungs and there's problems, it's usually in the lower third of the lung where the problem is. That's because these air sacs are not moving because of our bad posture and we're not exercising, and because they're not getting any air down in there to clean it out. Air is a wonderful cleaner. You breathe in and breathe out. So try to do several deep breaths, 20 or 30 of them, first thing in the morning like this or like this. If you want to do 100, that's fine too. Don't hyperventilate and get dizzy, okay? I want you to fall into your oatmeal. But and then do it after or before each meal, and then do it before you go to bed. That way, at least three or four times a day, you're exercising those lungs, getting that tissue moving, healthy, exercising. You know, it's got to move. Those lung tissues have to move to stay vibrant and healthy. Okay. Now, the rest of your days on this earth is going to depend upon the rest of your nights. All right? You've got to get good sleep. My dad used to work for intelligence with the CIA. And he said, when we want to really get deep information out of a spy, we don't let him sleep. Because my dad says within 3 or 4 days, you will go completely insane if you don't get sleep. And so this is where they get their information. It's not bloody. They don't scream. It's not messy. Just don't let them sleep. Every time they doze off, slap them, throw water in their face. Eventually, they'll turn in their grandmother. Yeah, because their mind will go away. They'll go insane. So this is why it's important you get good sleep. And this is where we like to cheat, don't we? We buy this little clock and put it beside the bed. And instead of letting our body clock wake us up, we have a mechanical clock wake us up, and we're in trouble, aren't we? Yes, your body will wake you up when it says, I'm good to go. But if you're not treating it right, it's not going to wake you up, is it? No, it's not. Now, the only time I have to do the alarm clock, just like Jim and your president, is when we do a lot of traveling. We mess up the time zones, you know. When I go to Europe, I go 3 or 4 days ahead so that I can get into sync with my circadian rhythms. Going to Europe is the hardest. Coming back is not so hard. It's when you go to the rotation of the earth, it's usually easier. But boy, going there, that kills me. I get there by Tuesday or Wednesday because I'll fall asleep in the middle of a conversation and I'm having the conversation. All right? When your body says it's sleep, it's going to knock you out. And by the way, it's more dangerous to get too much sleep than too little sleep. The body has no way to protect itself from too much sleep. Too little sleep, yeah, it'll knock you out in the middle of your soup, okay? But too much sleep, what happens is you get tighter and lazier and lazier and lazier. So there's no protection for too much sleep. So if you're going to err, you err on too little than too much. It's safer because then your body will catch you with it and just, like I said, knock you right out. So the way God set it up is when that sun sets and it starts getting dark out and the retina of your eye are not picking up much light, it starts to release a cortisone-type drug to put you to sleep. And you start getting tired within an hour or two after it starts getting dark. So by 9 or 10 o'clock, you should get to bed because your brain is being bathed into this drug to put you to sleep. By 11 o'clock, there's even less of this drug, and by midnight, it's gone. And if you have seen people stay up and they say, oh, suddenly I'm wide awake, I must have got my second wind. No, you didn't get a second wind. What happened was the drug is gone. And so we hired that little green butterfly to come into our house and put us to sleep. You know, Lunesta, is that what it's called? Yeah. And that's a chemically induced sleep, and most people wake up tired from that because it's not a natural sleep. You don't get all four stages naturally of the sleep. You don't get good REM, rapid eye movement sleep, which is when you're dreaming. That's why your eyes are moving. That's why they call it rapid eye movement. You're watching your dream. And if you ever see somebody who's in the middle of a dream, their eyelids, they're going back and forth like this because they're there. They're watching it. But when you have a drug-induced sleep, you don't get that. And so, you know, I took melatonin once, and I never take that again. I went to Russia one time. This doctor said, Paul, this will set your circadian rhythms right away. Just take this melatonin. I'm not even going to tell you what happened in this bloody nightmare that I had. But it was the most, when I woke up, my sheets were soaked. All of my bedclothes were soaked. I was so horrified and frightened, I will never even touch melatonin. And I talked to another lady, and she said, same thing happened to her. Worst nightmare of her life was taking melatonin. So some people it works for, and if it does, don't give it to me, because melatonin does not work for me. It backfired. So, you know, every system is different, and you have to find out, you know. Not everybody can eat 3 oranges a day. Not everybody can eat a banana. So you have to adjust some of these things, and we'll talk about that more when we talk about food. You can't make one rule for everybody. You can't say everybody has to be in bed by 10 o'clock. No, some people try to pull this trick, I'm a night owl. No, you're not. God made us all early birds, okay? It was sin that brought in the night owl. If you think you're a night owl, all you're going to do is walking around all day going, whoo, whoo, whoo. You're not a night owl, okay? You should be singing like the early birds instead of going, who, what, where. All right. So when the sun comes up in the morning, the opposite happens. The light enters into the room, and even though your eyelids are closed, the retinas, those, they're not tubes, but cones, pick up that light, and it starts releasing another chemical to wake you up. That's why if you're in bed asleep and someone comes into the bedroom and they turn on the light, what is your first reaction? Turn out the light! Because you realize the longer you look at that light, the harder it is for you to get to sleep because the body thinks, sun is up, let's go. And so that chemical, and it takes you a while to burn that chemical off and get back to sleep. So that's why in your sleeping area, let's move up to this next topic here about rest. That's right. Well, I put all that light, those light texts and verses here. But you want the room to be as dark as possible while you're sleeping. I grew up in Alaska. We can always tell people from the Lower 48 because they put aluminum foil in the bedroom window. Because in Alaska in the summertime, you can read a book. Well, you've been there, Jim. You can read a book outside all night, can't you? Yeah, you don't need a flashlight. They start a baseball game at midnight. It's called the Midnight Sun, whatever it is. You know that? You've been up to... Oh, okay, all right, so you know this. So anyway, you want to get the room as dark as possible because that's most conducive for sleep. You also want it as quiet as possible. Now, unfortunately, I'm a light sleeper. I wish I was a heavy sleeper. When I go to bed at night, I want to hear my hair grow. That's how quiet I like it, really, really quiet. And I travel with earplugs because I know I'm going to need them. But where I live, it's very, very quiet. But you want it quiet because every time the ear hears a sound, it has to talk to a brain. It's programmed that way. Every time it hears a sound, it has to notify the brain. You know, is this a life-threatening sound? You know, sirens, gunshot, glass shattering. Typical Los Angeles evening, okay? Or Chicago, a little closer to home. So you want it as quiet as possible. You also want air circulating in the room. If you close your bedroom window and you close your bedroom door, you have created a sarcophagus, a coffin. And I guarantee you will wake up tired because the room will be oxygen depleted by the time you wake up in the morning. There is no fresh air in that room. You're breathing dead exhalation, especially if you're married and two of you are sucking up that air, okay? And by the way, NASA discovered that if you'll put two plants in your bedroom, they provide more oxygen and remove more toxins out of the room than any other plants. NASA said these two plants are the philodendron and the spider plant. Those are the two plants. If you're going to have plants in your bedroom, those are the two you want. And I know spider plants are easy because I've had spider plants. I don't know about the philodendron. But NASA said those are the ones to put more oxygen in a room and remove more of the pollution out of the room. All right, your bed should be firm enough to support you, but gentle enough to be comfortable. I use those foam things on my bed. When I go to Germany, those feather beds, I take it down, I put it on the floor. I can't sleep. That's like oatmeal with raisins in it. I can't sleep in a feather bed. It's not firm enough to support me. It has to support you. You're going to wake up with a backache. All right, your pillow, again, if you sleep on your side, it has to be thick, and most people do sleep on their side. If it's thin, it has to be very thin so your head's not cranked up like this. You want your head down like that. And make sure you throw that pillow outside. I throw it out 4 or 5 times a month just to keep it nice and clean and sterile. Your cover should be lightweight. You're going to toss and turn about 40 times a night. You have to. If you don't, you'll develop bed sores and blood pools, which are extremely painful. So keep the covers lightweight. I never tuck my covers in on the side. I want them loose and hanging over, so I have plenty of freedom of movement as I'm sleeping. And the lights down comforters in the wintertime, that's what you put on your, not the heavy wool stuff. That constricts your movement. It's very, very disturbing to your sleep. All right? So that'll cover your sleeping. And like I said, the average is about 8 hours a day. Women who are pregnant, children who are growing, or if you're sick, you may require more. All right, 9, 10, 11, 12, until you get back to the normal again. But once you reach your teen years, late teens, you should be getting by on about 8 hours a day. Just go to bed without an alarm clock. Let your body wake you up, and it will. It'll say, hey, everything's taken care of in the brain. Everything's done with in the body. Let's go. We got another day to face. So we need to rest every night. We need to rest every Sabbath, and we need to rest every year. You need to take a vacation. I've had a lot of people say, oh, Paul, I've been so busy, I haven't had a vacation in 5 years. That's not good. That's not good. You need a vacation. You get caught in this thing called a rat race, you know? People talk about it. Even if you win, you're still a rat. All right? You've never heard a workaholic on their deathbed said, you know, I wish I'd have gone to the office some more. No, they said, I wish I'd have taken a few vacations. I wish I'd have done some more hiking or whatever. I build my vacations usually in my travels. I come early and I go see things, or I stay late and I see things. When I was in Paris, I climbed the Eiffel Tower. You're allowed to do that. I climbed the Eiffel Tower. When I was in New York, I climbed through the head of the Statue of Liberty. Used to be able to do that. You can walk standing through her crown. But everywhere I went, when I was in Australia, of course, I was out on the ocean in Australia. But everywhere I go, the Parthenon, when I was in Athens, oh, man, that was so shocking to me to actually see it. You know, when you see these things after you've seen them all these years, we came in from the airport. I don't know if you've ever been into Athens, but you come into that airport, suddenly you go around this curve, and there's the Parthenon right there. And I couldn't breathe. I just inhaled. I went, I said, is that the Parthenon? He goes, yes. I said, that's the Parthenon. The Parthenon. Let me out. I was in Red Square in Moscow. It was amazing. You know Basil's Cathedral? You've seen it, President? Yes. I mean, it's just amazing to actually be there. You know what that does for you? It's just so exciting, and it's just so wonderful, and you take all the pictures, and you look back on it. You get all this enjoyment from a vacation. Build your vacation in your travels, whatever you have to do. But don't just keep working, working, working. No, it's not good. You need to have your vacations, your time to step out of what you're normally doing, the grindstone, and move ahead with some wonderful, exciting memories. You can't have memories if you don't create them. Isn't that right? Yes. You want to have memories. You know, they say when a house burns down, what would you grab? Well, of course, anything that's living, you know, plants, animals, whatever. But the most important thing to me after that is my photo album. It's totally irreplaceable. Well, now, of course, everything's digital, and you can back it up on disks and put it in the cloud, or I don't know where all they hide it. But yeah, my photograph album, these are pictures that will never be replaced. And so that's the most treasured thing I have, are the memories of my schoolmates in elementary school, and college classmates, people I worked with, my church, all of these things. It's a big treasure to me. And I, every once in a while, I take them out and I just look at them. It's just nice. I reflect on those things. If the devil's busy making you depressed, just open up your photo album. Because you know what? Everybody's going to be smiling at you. Hey, Paul. Hey, Paul. Yeah. All right. I want to show you a couple of DVDs. We've got about four of them, but we're going to show you two of them right now, dealing more with tomorrow's topic on exercise and nutrition. So what we want to show you, since I talked about Bill Clinton yesterday, I'm going to go ahead and show you the clip of Bill when he was being interviewed by Wolf Blitzer on CNN News. And you know what really cracks me up is watching Wolf Blitzer's face. He's like this. You're a vegan? Vegan. I mean, he's like a deer in headlights. He just doesn't know what to hardly talk or to think. So we do. Are ready for that? He's going the wrong way. Oh, okay, he's getting the lights. And then right after that, the Bill Clinton one, let's show the 60 Minutes one. Okay?
How do you lose so much weight? What kind of diet are you on?
The short answer is I went on essentially a plant-based diet. I live on beans, legumes, vegetables, fruit. I drink a protein supplement every morning. No dairy. I drink almond milk mixed in with fruit and a protein powder. So I get the protein for the day when I start the day out. And it changed my whole metabolism, and I lost 24 pounds. And I got back to basically what I weighed in high school. But I did it for a different reason. I mean, I wanted to lose a little weight, but I didn't ever dream this would happen. I did it because after I had this stent put in, I realized that even though it happens quite often that after you have bypasses, you lose the veins because they're thinner and weaker than arteries. The truth is that it clogged up, which means that the cholesterol was still causing buildup in my vein that was part of my bypass. And thank God I could take the stents. I don't want it to happen again. So I did all this research, and I saw that 82% of the people since 1986 who have gone on a plant-based, no dairy, no meat of any kind, no chicken, turkey. I eat very little fish. Once in a while, I'll have a little fish. Not often. If you can do it, 82% of the people who've done that have begun to heal themselves. Their arterial blockage cleans up. The calcium deposit around their heart breaks up. This movement has been led by a doctor named Caldwell Esselstyn at the Cleveland Clinic, Dean Ornish, whom you know out in California. The doctors Campbell, father and son, who wrote the China study, and a handful of others. But we now have 25 years of evidence. And so I thought, well, since I need to lose a little weight for Chelsea's wedding, I'll become part of this experiment. I'll see if I can be one of those that can have a self-clearing mechanism. We'll see.
I hope you're healthy for many years and get to see grandchildren for many years.
Me too. That's really the big deal. You know why? Hillary and I, we're happy. We love our son-in-law, and we admire him. But we'd like to be around. If there's grandkids, we want to be there to do our part.
Mr. President, good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for what you're doing.
By the way, I think it's... Oh, go ahead.
As the Thanksgiving weekend comes to a close, you may feel as overstuffed as that turkey you ate. And if you're overweight, and the chances are you are, it's probably because you eat too much of the wrong stuff. Most of the wrong stuff we eat comes in a bottle, a can, or a box, food that's been processed. Much of that food has been flavored. The flavoring industry is the enabler of the food processing business, which depends on it to create a craving for everything from soda pop to chicken soup. It is Willy Wonka and his chocolate factory as a multi-billion dollar industry, an industry cloaked in secrecy. But recently, Givaudan, the largest flavoring company in the world, allowed us in to see them work their magic.
The story will continue in a moment. So definitely an aroma, the mandarin, dancy tangerine.
Real mild though, not in your face.
These are super sniffers, super tasters.
And more bitter.
On the prowl, the special forces first responders to the call for the next best taste.
The mandarin notes are fantastic.
Yeah.
They're braving the wilds of a citrus grove in Riverside, California, where Jim Hassel, whose nose and palate are legendary, leads a Givaudan team on a taste safari. Big game hunters in search of the next great taste in soft drink. Their inspiration, the greatest flavorist of them all, Mother Nature.
Seeing everything that's available really just drives the whole creative process.
Like an artist going to Rome or something.
Correct, correct.
But the ultimate purpose is to sell more soft drinks or whatever.
That's what we're in the business of. Selling flavors.
Let's go sniffing. Our perception of taste is largely located in the nose, but described in the language of music.
Do you get like a tropical note, a little bit of papaya?
Yep.
Potentially?
Yeah. Yeah. Cotton candy note.
Cotton candy a little bit.
They're plotting how to move the flavors they find in this grove to your supermarket shelf and then on to your stomach.
I can see it in a sports drink. I can see it in a water, flavored water. And I also could see it in a twist on an orange carbonated beverage.
When they find something they like, they extract its flavor molecules from the fruit on the tree. Then back in the lab, they mimic Mother Nature's molecules with chemicals.
Essentially, what you do is you take whatever this smells like
right. And
copy it.
Right, exactly.
And then I suppose you could, if you choose to, you could quote-unquote improve on it.
Exactly. Yes, all the time.
The Holy Grail, a flavor so good, you can't resist it.
In our fruit flavors, we're talking about we want, you know, a burst in the beginning and maybe a finish that doesn't linger too much so that you want more of it.
And you don't want a long linger because you're not going to eat more of it if it lingers.
Ah, so it's got to be a quick fix. And then...
Have more.
And then have more. But that suggests something else.
Exactly.
Which is called addiction.
Exactly.
You're trying to create an addictive taste.
That's a good word.
Or something that they want to go back for again and again.
Food companies know that flavor is what makes repeat customers. So they commission Givaudan to create what they hope will be a mouthwatering taste. Givaudan may be the biggest multinational you've never heard of. The Swiss company employs almost 9,000 people in 45 countries, providing tastiness to just about every cuisine imaginable.
There's a lot of secrecy involved in your profession, correct?
Our intellectual property are our formulas. Without that, we have nothing, so there's a lot of secrecy. You really don't want anyone to know.
My world is making things taste good.
Soda pop and chewing gum flavorist Michelle Hagen has helped Givaudan and the food companies make billions with her secret formulas.
I create thousands of flavors, so I need somewhere to put them. And I have a lot of flavors in here. So here are some oranges and tangerines.
750 flavors, orange, tangerine, mandarins.
Raspberry is one of my favorite. I can't even fit all my raspberries on here.
How different can raspberries be?
Oh, very different. Very different. Oh, yeah. You can make them jammy. You can make them sweet. You can make them floral. You can make them seedy. It's endless, really.
And the flavor ingredients might not have ever met a raspberry.
I have butyric acid artificial, and then I have butyric acid natural.
All flavors are combinations of chemicals. Artificial flavors are largely man-made. Natural flavors come from nature, but not necessarily from what the label implies. For example,
strawberry creations.
Strawberry and vanilla flavor can come from the gland in a beaver's backside.
So what we do is just manipulate them and create with them and give the impression of, you know, papaya or the strawberry.
Hagen is an illusionist. She's even created a flavor that mimics the taste and smell of an old oak tree.
To give whiskey a little bit more depth sometimes, a young whiskey.
Oh, to give the taste of the barrel it was supposed to have been aged in, correct?
Yes. Yeah, you can add some cask notes, some oak notes. Okay, here we go.
Hassel and Hagen let us in on the alchemy of inventing a new flavor. This one inspired by a Hong Kong kumquat that the team found not in Hong Kong, but back in Riverside. It's a process using hundreds of different notes until they've created a symphony of taste.
I mean, with a name like Hong Kong Kumquat, you really have to have something going on, I think.
But I'm curious to see the carrot on top of the kumquat.
That is interesting. That is very interesting.
You get the citrus, but you have the carrot poking its head out.
Yeah, it's very complex.
But not overpowering.
That's really exciting. This is a home run.
There's no shortage of metaphors in the flavoring business. Givaudan goes to the ends of the earth scouting for new flavors. In Hong Kong, Givaudan convened their annual conclave of top chefs from restaurants around the world to demonstrate their latest creations. The goal, to turn those creations into new commercial flavors. The chefs mixed, chopped, mashed, steamed, sautéed, and smoked for a week to create irresistible, cutting-edge cuisine. Hong Kong chef Alvin Leung didn't disappoint.
It makes you want to eat this again and again and again, okay? It's like sex, okay? You know, you want to do it over and over again until you get a headache.
The Givaudan team didn't just taste the food. They sniffed, photographed, analyzed, and debated it. Then they distilled the best into flavor powders, applied them to beef and noodles, and voila, a frozen dinner.
This is our translation into a frozen ready meal that you could buy in the supermarkets to really deliver a different eating experience.
Givaudan chef Stefan Strehler demonstrated how convincing these translations can be compared to the real thing.
We have here the whole lineup of some of the chicken flavors, so that's a roasted chicken flavor.
It sure is. It absolutely matches it. Givaudan makes flavors that match almost every kind of chicken imaginable. This is crusty, fatty chicken.
We just take a little skin here, and when you smell like that now, you get much more of those fatty, crusty notes. And when you smell like that flavor...
Yes, sure is. Now, what is this? Is this actually chicken?
It can be, yes. A lot of what you have in front of you is the chicken that has been translated into a flavor.
Translated on a grand scale in the Givaudan plant in Kentucky.
This is a chicken flavor. As a liquid in the tank.
An endless stream of brown liquid, part chicken, part chemical, all flavor.
This is the chicken we looked at in the tank right here.
Oh.
So this is the chicken in the hose.
Chicken in the hose, okay.
Chicken in the hose, right. We'll stretch this hose out and we'll actually load the liquid into these individual trays. It gets vacuum dried in the oven. And it comes out in a dry cake form. We'll grind that into a fine powder.
Chicken, just like grandma used to make. It's used in soups, stews, sausage, noodle, and rice dishes. Chicken by the ton. Chicken for every taste. Our old friend, Krusty Fatty. Chicken for vegetarians. Yes, chicken without chickens. Ground zero for the food and flavor industry is the supermarket. Givaudan won't reveal which brands contain their flavors, but in this aisle, almost every product on the shelves has been enhanced artificially or with so-called natural flavors. And not only that, virtually everything edible in a package, in a jar, in a can, is intensified with either fat, sugar, or salt, or all three of those little devils.
We're eating fat on fat, on sugar on fat, with flavor. And much of what we're eating with these flavors, you have to ask yourself, is it really food?
Dr. David Kessler is the former head of the FDA. He is Dr. No. He's bent on getting America to kick its bad habits.
We're living in a food carnival. These flavors are so stimulating. They hijack our brain.
Kessler believes flavorists are accomplices, the hired guns of the food industry.
They make food super palatable.
What's wrong with that?
Don't we want the richness of good taste?
Of course. Food has to be pleasurable. It has to be desirable. But look around, Morley. Look around this country, and what do you see? Ask the rest of the world how they view Americans, and they will say, we don't want to look like them.
Are you saying that the food industry and the flavoring industry together are trying to make and succeeded in making us addicted?
Did the industry do this deliberately?
No.
It learned what stimulates. It learned what people want.
There's no question we're trying to create an irresistibility and a memorability. I think, though, that there's then a leap to get to that leads to overconsumption.
Bob Pellegrino is Givaudan's flavor czar as vice president of global strategy and business development.
Your critics say, but you provide the means to seduce people into eating too much salt, too much fat, too much sugar, and responsible partly for the obesity in this country.
Our business is to make taste experiences pleasurable ones. So I don't think that the flavors create an overeating problem. I think that's a different issue.
But is it a different issue? Because surely what your clients want, the food industry wants, is to provide the kind of flavor that will make people want more.
I don't think it's creating a desire for moreness as well as it's a desire for memorability so that people will repeat the purchases of the product and enjoy them.
But given the obesity epidemic, the food industry is beginning to respond to pressure for lessness, if there is such a word, of fat, salt, and sugar. And that's opening up a whole new business opportunity and another challenge for these alchemists of flavor.
Everyone is working on health and wellness. How can you get a consumable, acceptable product that's better for you? And the challenge now is, how do you make them taste good?
Not enough.
So when you lower the salt, what can we put in that will make it taste like it did without salt? When you lower the sugar, how can you make it taste sweeter without adding calories? So it's a whole new world that didn't even exist 10 years ago. But the consumers are interesting. As much as they want to be healthy, right? If it's not as sweet, I don't want it.
People are still going for the tried and true, heavy on sugar, heavy on salt, heavy on fat.
Yeah, so I guess the real question is obesity going down? And I guess the answer would be no.
Pretty shocking, isn't that? Did you catch that with the strawberry flavoring? It's made from the behind of a beaver. A beaver is an unclean animal. And so that beaver's behind is in your strawberry flavoring. And it doesn't say artificial, it says natural strawberry flavor, because a beaver is natural. So these labels don't necessarily tell you the truth. When I grab some celery, I don't have to read the label. When I grab a carrot or a potato, I don't have to read the label. You see, what this is saying, and I want you to think about this, because we're going to talk about it more tomorrow when we get into diet. What they're saying is God did not know how to make food taste good. That's what they're saying. They're saying we have become the creator, and now we are going to create food. And when we create it, we always do something wrong, don't we? Everything we get a hold of, man ruins, doesn't he? Well, he's done the same thing with flavor. So now their goal, you heard them say it four or five times in this video, we want you to become addicted to our product. They won't disclose if they work for Hunt Wesson Foods or Snicker Bar or Coca-Cola. They won't say, but it works. They wouldn't be paying them millions of dollars if it didn't work. But it works, and these corporations are hiring them, and you're buying the food, and when you ingest some of this stuff, you are getting reactions in your body that you don't know what's going to happen. You may go blind. You may lose your hearing. You may have bowel problems. You may develop cancer. How could I have cancer? I've never smoked. Well, some of these foods you've been eating have cancerous reactions in a human body, because they don't test it on that much. There's no 5-year, 20-year test on these flavorings. They just say, oh, it's natural. Okay, the FDA says, you know, the FDA's catchphrase, it's fit for human consumption. You would have a fit if you knew what you were consuming. Yeah, but more about that tomorrow. What I need to tell you a story on me is about potato chips. Now, I'm 2/3 Irish and German, which means I'm stuck with potatoes. Irish and the German love their potatoes. And I never met a potato I didn't like. I love potatoes. My mother, anything she wanted me to eat, she made sure she stuck it in a potato. I would eat it. I love potatoes. Well, I had not eaten potato chips for years, because I know what potato chips are, so do you. A lot of salt, a lot of grease, and a little bit of potato to hold those two together. Isn't that right? So I hadn't eaten potato chips for years. But I was working on a mission program with Country Life, and we had a visitor come in from France, Gilles Lopin. And he was assigned to be my roommate. And Gilles says, "Oh boy, I love to be in America because I love the American potato chip. I have nothing like this in France." I said, "Really?" He goes, "Ah, it's so good." And I said, "Yeah, I know, it's pretty tasty." He said, "But you do not eat this." I says, "No, I don't eat it." And he says, "Ah, it's so good." Anyway, I was asked to go down to the Hopi and Indian Reservation to help with the Hopi Indian tribes. So I told Jill, I said, "I'm going to be gone for a few weeks. I'm going down to southern Arizona to work with the Indians." And he says, "Where is this at?" So I showed him on the map, and he goes, "Oh, boy, you go right next to the Grand Canyon." And I said, "Oh, yeah, we do." And he goes, "Oh, boy, I'd love to go with you. I would like to see the Grand Canyon." And I said, "Well, it's just a big hole in the ground. I had never seen it." How many of you have seen the Grand Canyon? That's some hole, isn't it? Yeah. So I said, "Okay, Jill, we can go see this big hole in the ground if you want to go see it." I wasn't interested at first because I had never seen it. So anyway, we got right near the Grand Canyon. We stopped off in a grocery store. I said, "Well, let's go get something for a picnic." And he says, "All right, I will wait in the car. You get the food." So I went in, came back with a bag of groceries. He goes, "Wow, what do we have for lunch?" You know, so I pulled out some apples and some peanut butter and some whole grain bread. And I pulled out a little tiny bag of potato chips. And he goes, "Ha, très bien, merci beaucoup, American potato chip." And I said, "Yeah." He goes, but you do not eat this?" I said, "No, it's for you." He said, "Oh, you're my friend." You see, I wasn't judging him or condemning him for eating potato chips. I mean, I'd eaten them before and I survived. Now, I do draw the line on drugs and alcohol and cigarettes. I don't buy that for nobody. But I bought him a bag of potato chips. Well, he got so excited he couldn't wait. He opened up that bag right there in the car. And pretty soon, potato chip aroma started filling the car. And my nose started to expand. And then he reached in and he started eating them. Crunch, crunch, crunch. And soon, potato chip breath was filling that car. Well, by now, my nostrils were covering half of my face. "Ooh, ah, yeah, give me that bag." And I finished it off. Well, when I got back home, I couldn't stop eating potato chips. I was addicted again. Now, this was pretty serious because the community where I lived, I was in Port Townsend for about 9 years. I was a director of a better living center there, and I was well known in the community. I was first name basis on both mayors who were in office. I got along really well with the mayors. They would do anything for me. You know, National American Meet Out, the Stop Smoking Nationally, and all the things. And the editor of the paper liked me. He says, "Every time you go on a mission trip, come back with lots of pictures. We'll do a full-page story on you in the paper." I served on the Ministerial Association. I was an officer. These are not Adventist ministers. This is the Ministerial Association for the whole city. And I was an officer here, and I was on drug summits and drug councils. 3 years in a row, I was graduation speaker at the public high school, 3 years in a row. And so I was rather well known, and I ran barefoot on the beach there, out to the lighthouse and back, and they called me the barefoot runner. Other people called me Mr. Granola, but those are my nicknames. That's better than dumb, stupid, or drunk, huh? So, barefoot runner, Mr. Granola. So anyway, I got back, and I couldn't stop eating potato chips. And so this was bad. So I would have to go down to the grocery store and walk down the aisle until I saw a new clerk who didn't know who I was. And then I would run to the potato chip aisle, grab a bag, run up to the front. She'd say, "Paper or plastic?" I'd say, "Paper, quick," because I wanted to hide that. You know, it's terrible when you're an addict. You got to cover your tracks. So one day I went down there. The potato chips were on sale. You know how that is. Devil puts them on sale. So I got two bags. And I put it in the paper bag, and I was walking home. Now, where I lived there at the center was just up the hill from a picnic area, a big park. And so there were picnic tables and trash cans and everything like that. And I was walking home just so happy with my drugs. And as I walked by this trash can, my guardian angel thumps me. And he said, "Throw those potato chips away." "Say what?" He said, "Throw those potato chips away." I said, "My money, my chips. I'm eating them." He said, "Throw them away." I said, "No." He said, "Now." I said, "Ruh." So I threw them away, and I pouted all the way home. Got back to the house, ate my dinner, sitting around, studying and talking and stuff. At 9 o'clock at night, all I could think about were those potato chips. And in the cover of darkness, at 9 o'clock, I went back to that trash can, which you laughing at. And I dug around, and I got those chips, and I put them under my shirt so nobody could see. I ran back to the house, and at 9 o'clock, I ate that whole bag of chips. And I said, Lord, this has got to stop. And he said, now you're ready. Now you're ready. Now I want you to follow this very, very carefully, what I'm going to tell you. I don't want you to ever forget. If you forget nothing else in this seminar, you remember what I'm just about to tell you. The Lord was telling me, Paul, you and I are doing so many wonderful things together. I want you to stop focusing in on your growing area and instead focus on what you and I are doing. The devil is going to try to focus you on where you're growing, doesn't he? Yeah, you're not there yet. You're still messing up. But Jesus is saying, you focus on what you and I are doing. Paul, I know you love the broccoli. I know you love the potatoes. I get those strawberries just for you, and I know you like those strawberries. He said, the critical factor is you're having a devotional life, which we're going to talk about on Friday. As long as you're having a devotional life, you're seeking the Lord. He who began a good work in you, Scripture says, he will finish it, won't he? He'll complete it. So if you're having a devotional life, that means God has begun a good work in you. Let him finish it. Just let him. That's his job. But if you're having a daily devotional life, he takes care of the diet, he takes care of the music, he takes care of the clothes and the jewelry, he takes care of the entertainment, he takes care of your friends, doesn't he? Yes, because he who began a good work in you is going to finish it. When you try to finish it, you're going to get discouraged. Oh, I ate that again. Oh, I watched that movie and there was some bad words in that movie and I shouldn't be wearing this, it's a little revealing and I don't need to wear the bling, bling, shine, shine, you know. All that stuff's coming off, isn't it? We're putting on that robe of righteousness. We're going to be walking on bling. We don't wear it. Okay? So, anyway, the Lord says, Paul, you just keep seeking me. You let me take care of that. You're drinking lots of water. You love running barefoot. You got good nicknames in this town. Barefoot runner, Mr. Granola. Man, be proud of that, you know? So I saw God and I were doing so many wonderful things together. I don't focus on my growing area. You focus on the growing area, you're going to be discouraged because you think you need to be here when you're still growing. You know, when you first plant the corn, you don't try to eat it. You let it grow. And there's nothing wrong with it being this high in a few weeks. It doesn't have to be up here, but the devil says, oh, you're supposed to be up here. Say, no, 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 I'm down here still, but I'm growing, because I'm seeking God every day. And if I seek him, he who began a good work in me is going to finish it. So, that night, I was done with the chips. I've never eaten them again. Now, if you get in my car and you open up a bag of chips, I will throw you out at 90 miles an hour. We have to know where our weaknesses are, don't we? We have to know where our struggles is. There are some movie theaters you shouldn't be driving by and seeing what's on showing on the movies. Isn't that right? Some of us can't go buy chicken licking because it smells good. Or Drunken Donuts. Oh, man, start salivating. Drive around four times. Lord, if you provide a parking place, I'll know you're letting me have some chicken again. And after a half an hour driving around, he said, there's one right there. No, not. Yes. So I want you to focus in on your daily devotional life, which we're going to talk about on Friday. Because if you're doing that, all the rest of the stuff's going to be taken care of. Isn't that right? Yes. Okay. Don't focus in on your growing area. I can't emphasize this enough. And when someone else is growing in an area, don't you jump on them for it. Praise and encourage them with things they are doing. And same thing for yourself. What are God and I doing together? Oh, we're drinking lots of water. I get to bed on time. I'm studying my Sabbath school quarterly. I'm memorizing the book of Psalms. Whatever it is that you and God are doing together, you focus on that. And you will be amazed at what you can allow God to do. Now, there's two Bible stories. So I got 15 minutes left. Two Bible stories I want to share with you. And you're familiar with both of these stories. The man at the pool of Bethesda. But I wish I had a whiteboard up here. I like the name of that, the pool of Bethesda. Have you ever taken a close look at the word Bethesda? Huh? Spell it out. Do anybody have a piece of paper? Bethesda? Oh, you have some whiteboard here? Okay, are you just going to turn around, let me watch. I can write on the yellow, that's good. Yes? What? Was it making you drool? Okay. Oh, boy, you guys just have everything here, don't you? Were there any mangoes back there? You ate them. You ate them. Okay. How many of you ever taken a close look at the word Bethesda? Uh-huh. The Pool of Bethesda. Yeah, that's how you spell Bethesda. B-D-S-D-A. And what was that? There was a pool for healing, wasn't it? So I think it's so appropriate that the Pool of Bethesda, the place of healing, you can be the SDA. Bethesda. That's good. I like that. All right. So, a man is there at the Pool of Bethesda, and he'd been there for 38 years, waiting for a miracle. And then one day, a miracle walks by. His name is Jesus. And Jesus sees the man, and he asks him a question. Now, this is a very important question. It's a question that I'm going to ask. I ask at every one of my seminars, and I'm asking you guys today this question. And here it is. John chapter 5. Oops. Oh, we got to move way up here. Oh, no, we got to go back the other way. Sorry. Let's see where we're at. Let me see where I've got it. You know what? I need, let's see. It should be right there. It's supposed to be right after after the Paula story. John chapter 5, verses 6 and 8. Maybe I didn't go down far enough. That was the problem. I didn't go far enough. That's not like mine, but that'll work. All right. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew he had been that... This is a different translation. Okay. Knew he had been now had... Is she why I like King James? Knew that he had been now a long time. Oh, can we find mine? I can't read King James. I'm sorry, I was born in the 20th century. Find the Paula pictures, and I think I didn't go far enough. It's after the Paula pictures. By the way, Ellen White did not use the King James all the time. For you King James lovers, if you like it and it works, fine. But for me, it does not work. I almost flunked Shakespeare in secular university because I could not understand King James. William, there we go. Now. When Jesus saw him lying there, knew it had already been in that condition a long time, he said to him, now here's the question, it's the one I'm asking you, do you want to be made well? That's the question. That's the big question. Now this man had excuses, didn't he? I don't have anybody to put me in the water. Somebody always gets in ahead of me. And you know, in all the years I've been teaching these seminars, about 30 years now, I've heard lots of excuses. Paul, I'm too tired to exercise. Do you know one of the reasons you're tired is because you don't exercise? Because when you exercise, your BMR, your basal metabolic rate, goes up. And you get more energy when you exercise. It's really true. Paul, my wife is such a good cook, she's killing me. Yeah, you better have lots of insurance. So, the question is, do you want to be made well? When this guy blurted out excuses, Jesus' next response to him, after listening to his excuses, was, rise, take up your bed and walk. Now, I believe today Jesus is asking every one of you the same question. Do you want to be well? Oh, but Lord, do you want to be well? But Lord, no excuses. The reason he asks you today, do you want to be well, is because he fully intends to give you the power to rise, take up your bed, and walk. He doesn't ask you today, do you want to be well, to tease you and to taunt you. He's asking you right now, do you want to be well? Because if you do, he's ready and able and willing to give you the power to do it. Isn't that right? Absolutely. He asks us the question because he's ready to give us the power and the desire to do it. You say, how does this happen? How does this work? I believe the answer is found in Daniel chapter 1. I love Daniel because it's a wonderful story of a young man who stood firm and didn't compromise, even though it could have cost him his life. And in Daniel chapter 1, you recall what's going on here. King Nebuchadnezzar has won a victory. He's bringing all the spoils of war back to the palace. And he's bringing the very best of the young men, the best looking, the strongest, the smartest, come to the king's palace. And they're going to begin a 3-year training program. And those who are successful will be serving in the king's court. And when they brought in all of these good-looking, strong, healthy men, there were 4 very special men that showed up. Daniel. You know, everywhere I go, people give these poor guys their pagan names. It was not Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It was Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Don't you call him Shadrach in heaven? He says, my name is not Meshach. It's Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. I'm on a campaign to defend these boys. Okay? So give them their Christian God-given names. So these 4 guys go, and they go through the potluck line, and there's a problem. Have you ever noticed that? You know, I have been in a church where there was not a single thing I could eat in the potluck line. I got to the end with, and you know, it's embarrassing because they want the pastor to go, the preacher go first, so they give me a plate, and I looked, and I looked, and I looked, because I knew I had to speak in a couple of hours. I couldn't be in a coma from what I ate. And so I got to the end, and I set the plate down, empty. What could I do? I knew I couldn't eat this stuff. And so I just set the plate down. This was an Adventist church. The very best one that I ever went to, I took pictures of it, was in Austria. Those Austrians knew what I ate. And I'm telling you, I could have dove face first, clear across that table with my arms wide open. I never saw such a display of food just like God had it. It was the most amazing buffet I'd ever seen. So anyway, these guys go through the potluck line, and there's a problem. There's a problem there in the potluck line. They said, man, what are we going to do? We're going to be here for 3 years. We can't eat this stuff for 3 years. And they said, yeah, I know. Let's pray about it. So they prayed about it. Daniel went to the guard, and he said, listen, could we do an experiment? He says, what do you want to do? We would like to just eat vegetables and drink water while we're here. And I can just see the guard now. Oh, great. I got a bunch of vegetarians on my hand. Where are you going to get your protein? What about your B12 and your calcium? Because you realize that if these guys get sick, it could be his neck, huh? He's got to take care of these boys. And Daniel said, look, let's just do the experiment for 10 days. And the guard's probably thinking, okay, end of 10 days, they'll be begging for a Big Mac. He says, all right, eat your plants for 10 days. We'll see what happens. So for 10 days, they ate their vegetables. Just how long? 10 days. That's all it took. And you can see the difference. So at the end of 10 days, guard says, hey, you guys are looking pretty good. Go ahead, eat your plants, drink your water. You're on your own. And so they did. And what happened at the end of 3 years? The king brought in these 4 guys, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Brought him in for the interview. And when he brought him in for the interview, this is incredible. Daniel 1:15, at the end of 10 days, they died. Is that what happened? Huh? No. It says at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all young men who ate a portion of the king's delicacies. Okay, I got a little behind myself there. That was at the end of 10 days. At the end of 3 years, it says, in all matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in his realm. Now, I hope you caught the significance of that statement. Were they 10 times better than their classmates? No. They were 10 times better than the experts. I hope you caught that. These men had had 30, 40, 50 years experience, and yet these young boys were 10 times smarter than them. That's unheard of. You ever heard of a medical student graduating from medical school, and he shows up at the hospital, and he's 10 times smarter than the chief of staff at that hospital? Doesn't happen. How about a teacher graduating from teacher school? She shows up at the school, she's 10 times smarter than the principal at that school. Doesn't happen, but it does here. These guys are 10 times smarter. What about you? What about me? Can it happen for us? Absolutely. God is no respecter of persons. Only thing he respects is your choice. And even Satan is not allowed to cross that line. You make the choice. God sees to it. You get to carry out your choice. It's always your choice. So how did they do it? How did they pull it off? How are you going to do it? How am I going to do it? The answer is found in verse 15. Daniel 1:15 says, but Daniel purposed in his heart, or he made up his mind, that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies or the wine which he drank. drank. What did he do? Made up his mind. And my brothers and sisters, that's the issue. Make up your mind. Because once you make up your mind, you get power. Is that right? That's right. Yeah. Scott, if you and I decide to go out and get drunk tonight, can we get drunk? Yeah. Joya, you can come with us too, huh? Yeah. Josephine, where are you at? I saw you. Yeah, Josephine, you want to go with us? We're going out drinking. You can bring your daughter if you can hold her up, keep her steady. Once we make up our mind, we get to do it. Isn't that right? If I want to get drunk tonight, I can get drunk tonight, can't I? Absolutely. There's no question about it. If I want to stay sober, I can stay sober. Isn't that right? By my choice. And we're going to learn more about that a little later on in the week. Once you choose, you get power. Always remember that. Once you choose, you will be given power. If you choose the right, you have power for the right. If you choose the wrong, you will have power for the wrong. And you and I have seen this over and over again in our lives. Even when we choose the wrong, we have power to do it. But when we choose the right, we also have power to do that. So make up your mind. That's where the battle is, this frontal lobe. This is what makes us unique more than any other animal on planet Earth. Did you know that? Our frontal lobe is one-third of our cranial capacity. Did you know that? That's very interesting. There's no other animal that has this massive frontal lobe. All other animals, at the end of their snout, it slopes back. Isn't that right? Ours goes straight up because we need to have a lot of room so that one-third of our brain is frontal lobe. Why? Because frontal lobe is what makes us in divine character. That's what makes us above the animals. Dogs, cats, fish. By the way, did you know what? Sorry for you cat lovers, but dogs have 3 times more frontal lobe than a cat. Cats are killers. If you were a little smaller and he was a little bigger, you'd be dinner. Yes. They have a very, very small frontal lobe. But dogs have 3 times the frontal lobe that a cat does. Now, I'm not saying you can't have kitties, you know, and cats and stuff like that. But I'm just telling you, this is what the science is telling us. That's why they said dog is man's best friend. He's always happy to see you. He will die to protect you and to keep you safe. And that's because he has this much larger frontal lobe of his reasoning. And so man has this massive frontal lobe, and this is what Satan wants access to, isn't it? And he will use the 5 avenues to this. What are the 5 avenues to your soul? It's your 5 senses. Everything you see, hear, smell, taste, or touch, Satan wants access to. That's why every year he's creating new music. That's why every year he's creating new entertainment for you to watch and new smells to smell and new things to taste, because he's trying to get in through to your soul. And that's why we're told we need to guard the 5 avenues to our soul. And I try to be very diligent about that. There are churches I go to, I have to step outside when they play the music, because I grew up in the 60s and I know what that sounds like. And I don't care if you're saying Jesus between the drum beats, it's not taking me to the throne of God. It's driving me away. And I am bleeding and dying when I hear that music. And I have to step away. I have to step away. I know what it sounds like. Being out in the world, you're very sensitive. You have scars, and when they get touched, you feel it right away. And so when I hear something that smacks of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, I can't handle it. I start bleeding. I start dying. And I have to step away. And there are some churches I had to go outside and close the door so I wouldn't hear that. There's no way I could preach with a clear mind with that kind of thundering in my head, because I know what that was. And it didn't take me to Jesus. It took me to drugs and alcohol. Are you following that? You shouldn't be hard on people who say, you know, I can't listen to it. Oh, come on, there's nothing wrong with it. Well, maybe for you there isn't. But you're supposed to help your brothers and sisters. And if you see your brother and sister falling, if he's suffering, you pick him up. You don't say, well, just keep listening to it. You'll get used to it. No, I don't want to get used to that again. It's like getting used to the potato chips again. I don't want to. I don't want to. I have to step away. I'm very sensitive to music. Now, it doesn't mean everything has to be the old Rugged Cross. I like to dream the impossible dream, you know. Some of the songs from The Sound of Music. The hills are alive with the sound of music. There's very positive music out there. It doesn't all have to be about Jesus. But if it's uplifting and it draws you to a happier place and a more noble place, I see nothing wrong with it. So I didn't want to get into a music lecture. But 5 avenues to our soul. Satan is wanting access to you. And so you got to be smart about this. You got to be smart about this, saying, how is Satan getting through me? And you say, well, you know, I don't even have a television anymore. I said, okay, what's in your refrigerator? What magazines do you have in your house? All of these things. This is why, as a pastor, first thing I want to do is get into my parishioner's house. They don't do that anymore. Did you know that? I have not had a pastoral visit yet as a Seventh-day Adventist. Never had a pastoral visit. Yeah, but I want to get into their house, because when I get to their house, all I'm doing is looking for ways that I can help them. I'm seeing what magazines they're reading, what books are on their shelf. If the TV guide is marked up, then they're quarterly. Yes. I used to be a TV holic. You could say Tuesday night, 8 o'clock, I'd say, oh, I watch this and this. Thursday night, 9 o'clock, oh, I watch this. I would wake up in the morning looking forward to what I was going to be watching on TV that night. I was bad. Yeah. So I know I have to guard that, because it's easy for me to sit down and watch a movie. And you've seen all the studies about the brain. You go into alpha brain waves when those movies go on, and everything goes in and is recorded. And you experience it. It's just like you did it, but you're experiencing vicariously. And I have to guard that. I don't want that to happen. So Daniel said he made up his mind. And that's what you and I have to do every day. We have to make up our mind. Am I going to allow God to build me up, or am I going to allow Satan to tear me down? And you know, when he tears you down, he tears down all your loved ones, because you're going to be influencing them as well. You're not going to be the shining light that they need to guide them to the kingdom of heaven. And so it's more than just me. It's a responsibility. I can remember sometimes I'd start out going for my jog. I used to run an hour a day, 6 days a week. I never jogged on Sabbath. But I would do 6 days. That's why I'm a silver medalist. And I'll share those with you tomorrow. But there were sometimes I would start out running, and a couple of minutes I'd say, ugh, I just don't want to run today. But then I'd stop and think, you know, Tim and Brenda aren't going to run today. Mark isn't going to run today. Kathy's not going to run today. I need to run for them. I need to exercise this body and clear this mind for them. And so do it for somebody else. If you don't have enough to do it for yourself, do it for a loved one. Think of doing it for your grandchildren or your children. Or your husband, or your wife. Do it for them. If you don't love yourself enough, love them enough to do it for them. And that can be the motivation for some people. Well, I don't think I'd do it for myself, but my grandkids, I'll do anything for my grandkids. I'll do anything for my wife. So keep that in mind. All right, we've almost run out of time for questions. Any questions? I know we went kind of quick, but you can get the DVDs. I think they're recording all of these, aren't they? Yeah. All right, any questions? Yes. She just opened up a box of worms. She says, what is natural flavoring? And I get this all the time. People say, look, Paula, is this okay for me to eat? It says natural. Cocaine is natural. Okay? Just because it says natural, that's a word, that buzzword that they got you to buy into, saying, well, this is natural, I can eat it. No. Well, if it's not natural, what is it? Unnatural? Supernatural? Natural is not the word that you have to look for of whether or not you should be eating it. In fact, if you're eating correctly, you shouldn't have to be looking for any words. You should be just looking and saying, this is celery, this is potato, this is apple, this is pear, this is orange, this is avocado. You don't have to read the label to find out what it is. God didn't put the word natural on any of his products. He says it's obvious. If it grows, it's good. All right? If it grows, it's good. I like to eat things that come out of the ground or out of the tree. If I have to chase it, I let it go. If it's got a mama, I don't eat it. If it has a face, I don't eat it. If it goes to the bathroom, I don't eat it. Potatoes don't go poo-poo. Why? Because there's no waste in the potato. Strawberries don't go to the bathroom. Bananas don't go to the bathroom. Why? There's no waste. But an animal goes to the bathroom because he's full of waste. And when you eat him, you're eating his waste. I'll explain that to you tomorrow. We're jumping ahead of my lecture here. But anyway, that's what I found. Remember what I told you the first day? I want to do things the easy way. The easy way. The easy way is head to the Garden of Eden. And that's what we're told. She says, we need to get back to the Garden of Eden. So you know what that's going to look like, don't you? You know what your grocery list is going to look like when you go back to the Garden of Eden. There's no brands. There's no labels. There's nothing. There's just grab it and eat it. Grab it and eat it.